marriage issue today. It's whether or not gay people should be allowed to get married. They're dealing with it on the continent. In fact, there's a whole case now between Dutch citizens got married and one was a French citizen and lost his French citizenship. It's a longer story I don't have time for. They're going to rectify that under French law. But the one thing you should know about Mildred Jeter Loving is that last year, a year before she died, Mildred Loving endorsed the right of gay people to get married. She said, "If I did not, I would be a hypocrite." So I dedicate this show to Mildred Loving and the miracle she committed, she did in 1967, and hope that that miracle comes soon in our day. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I made a certain promise before the program began in response to the following email. Bob, is there any remote chance that when I tune in to Head On tonight, there will be only an abbreviated discussion of what happened in North Carolina and Indiana? I would suggest that there is not one person tuning in who is there because they want the latest breaking news regarding yesterday. There's no more election. The superdelegates are up for sale. There's something going on behind the curtain. Is it possible to have discussions about bigger issues? Or the little bitty ones that make up a larger picture by connecting the dots? Drought, fungus on crops in Middle America, flooded farmlands in Mississippi, the warming of the Gulf waters, the troubles between Georgia and Russia, the building of Disney World in Iraq, on and on and on. My response? The Magic 8-Ball says, highly likely. I am all primaried out. And I do, you know what happened yesterday, right? What happened yesterday was, round 36 or something? Or round 45 or 48? I don't know. In the great wrestling match. Because, baby, it is all wrestling. So, you know, let that stand for what it is. It's all wrestling. And Hillary don't gotta quit until Hillary decides to quit. And one of two things will happen. Like some pathetic old drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning being gently cajoled out of the bar, she may leave the race. Or she may say, you'll have to call the cops to get me out. In which case, you know, it'll be uglier than that. Or she'll just stay till Denver and watch all the ground around her go up in flames. It's called a scorched earth policy. I don't have the crystal ball out on this one. I don't have an answer. The only real answer is that we know that by August the 28th, 2008, there will be a Democratic nominee for president. That is the only sure thing. Period. There's no doubt in my mind that when my primary rolls around next week, I'm voting for Barack Obama. The rifle ad with the gun pointed at a picture of Barack's head really did it for me. And I'm sorry if that's shallow. I apologize to those who think that it is. But I sit here and I say over and over again that voting is a moral act, and I believe that my vote represents my endorsement of certain things. I don't have the first problem with preachers saying crazy things because preachers say crazy things. But I got a problem with representations, deliberately reversed representations of firearms pointed at another candidate's head, especially when that candidate is an African-American male. Okay? Okay. But, like I said, it is a moral act, this business of voting. And I don't have a problem with preachers saying crazy things, because that's what preachers are in the business of doing. And that all fits very nicely, because this is, after all, Wednesday, and Wednesday isn't just another day on Head On. No, no, no. Wednesday, brothers and sisters, is prayer meeting. That's right. Fire up the choir.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah. Solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
That's right, brothers and sisters. Come on down the blood red carpet and get your magic cracker. Kneel at the altar, put your hands upon the subwoofers, and feel the rays of common sense flowing through your body. Hallelujah. Glory. Yes. Welcome to prayer meeting. And let me just say this real quick. Let me just get this out of the way. No, not get this out of the way. That's way too snarky and assish. if you're the praying type, if you pray however you pray, I would suggest some serious, extra-dimensional communication. Not for the 80 to 100,000 dead in Burma, but for God knows how many they left behind to face a world of uncertainty, a world of agony, and a world of hurt. Because you see, it's pretty much going to take divine intervention, because the Bush administration has said, screw you. If you don't know, Laura Bush came out a couple of days ago and lectured the Burmese government, which is a really awful government, by the way. Not a government I would choose, and probably not the government that most Burmese would choose by any stretch of the imagination. But the Bush administration has become so utterly tone-deaf that they can't even realize what it sounds like, and the hypocrisy involved when they come out and do things like Pickles did the other day, lecturing the Burmese government on its on how to respond to a natural disaster. I know, you're sitting there doing the same thing that I did the first time I saw it. You've probably seen or heard the audio by now, where you said, I mean, if Laura had the stupid-looking pearls on and had that hateful old beast that looks like the guy, love child of the guy from the Quaker Oats box, you know, George's mama standing next to him, talking about how good it's working out for the Burmese, the refugees from the cyclone, it'd be perfect. It would be up and down Katrina. All we need is a picture of John McCain and George Bush cutting a cake somewhere while the Burmese drowned. And you'd have the reality of the Bush administration. Now, you know me. I am mathematically challenged. Oh, wait a minute. Just for the fun of it, just because I can't resist, because it is prayer meeting. And you know what? One of the things, if you're not a churchgoer or never have been a churchgoer, one of the things that preachers like to talk about, by the way, I'm an ordained minister now. I did that online thing where, but it's not, you're not ordained online. You're ordained by a real, live, honest-to-God member, member of the clergy of the Universal Life Church or whatever, but I'm ordained. Hot diggity. I haven't come up with the extra couple of $100 to have a real fancy name put in front of me, but I'm ordained now. So what preachers do in their preaching services is talk about evil in the world and how to combat evil and why evil exists. And in this case, I can't help but think that, you know, evil exists in the form of Laura Bush to remind us what we can expect out of four more years of Bush in the form of the McCain-Churian McCain candidate. You know, John Sidney McCain the third, I mean. That guy. I mean, honest to God, I ran a little bit of this last night on the horn section, not very much at all, but just listen to this. This is stunningly tone-deaf. Stunningly evil. Stunningly nasty, and typically Bush.
That many of the Burmese people learn of this impending disaster only when foreign outlets such as Radio Free Asia and Voice of America sounded the alarm. Although they were aware of the threat, Burma's state-run media failed to issue a timely warning to citizens in the storm's path.
Time out! Only because of Voice of America and Voice of... Problem is, we don't have anything like that here in America because Republicans being Republicans, we can't have radio stations that use the and television stations that use the public airwaves actually doing the public business. No, instead, the Gulf Coast of Mississippi had to rely on one sole lone individual, our buddy Bryce, climbing a tower in 70-mile-an-hour winds to make sure that some sort of public service was out there to continue getting information to people in the terrified darkness. Aw, damn, we didn't have no Voice of America when Katrina hit. Why? Because of the Bush administration and because of the Reagan administration. And yes, in part, because of the Clinton administration. Sorry. Just a fact. Just is. Fairness doctrine went away under Ronald Reagan. Media ownership rules went away under Bill Clinton, which then paved the way for Clear Channel to try to buy every radio station in America and program them all from some dark little dungeon in Texas or Carolina or somewhere. But then again, the Gulf Coast had warning. Storm was moving at 40 miles an hour. Adequate time to do some of what needed to be done. But there's only so much you can do when a storm that size is bearing down upon you and you've got a population that is immobile in many instances. A population made up of people who don't have driver's licenses. A population in centers that don't have meaningful public transportation for evacuation purposes. Let's review here real quick. Let's look at Burma. Right-wing authoritarian dictatorship government. 100,000 dead. Cuba. Left-wing so-called communist government gets hit about twice a year by hurricanes and seldom has anyone die. United States of America? Right-wing, authoritarian, semi-pseudo-fascist government, at least when the Republicans are in office and part of the time otherwise, can't prepare its people for a hurricane moving at 40 miles an hour with days of advance notice and can't even be bothered to fix levees over areas that are below sea level when they know that those levees aren't even designed to stop any a hurricane two categories down from the one that struck. That's a real head-scratcher, isn't it? But let's go back to pickles for just a minute or two.
Response to the cyclone is just the most recent example of the junta's failure to meet its people's basic needs. The regime has dismantled systems of agriculture, education, and health care. This once wealthy nation now has the lowest per capita GDP in Southeast Asia. Despite the havoc created by this weekend cyclone, as far as we can tell, Burma's military leaders plan to move forward with the constitutional referendum scheduled for this Saturday, May 10th.
Pardon me. Who gives a damn? Do you think the Burmese people give a damn about a referendum on May 10th when they're starving? When disease is beginning to run rampant? When there's no access to potable water. I mean, you know, I'm just funny that way. I think about this stuff, but Laura needs to lecture us. Laura? Where the hell was George? I mean, why wasn't George out there delivering this lecture? But this thing goes on and on and on and on. You know what the Johnny-on-the-spot White House press corps asked her about when it was over? Jenna's wedding plans. You have no idea how desperately I wish I was kidding. It was so obvious that the administration had gone completely tone-deaf on this. Tone-deaf, smone-deaf. No, they screw it. It's brown people. Who cares? Katrina, Mississippi Gulf Coast, Lower Ninth Ward, a lot of brown people. Who cares? Burma, a lot of brownish people. Who cares? Now, on the other hand, if a Category 5 hurricane had hit, say, Kennebunkport, well, we'd move heaven and earth now, wouldn't we? But it didn't, and it's not, and it's brown people, and who cares? Right? That's them. That's how they are. That's the curtain pulled back, and that's the that's what the picture in the closet of Dorian Gray looks like. Who cares? Now, the U.S. government says it's going to release some. Well, it might. You do know there are some strings attached to the aid that we have talked about giving to Burma. George said that he would release up to $250,000 for disaster relief to the Burmese, but only if the Burmese allow an American disaster assessment team to come in. Blackwater? KBR? Halliburton? I mean, who's going to be on that disaster assessment team? Come on, we're talking about the Bush administration here, right? $250,000. 250 miserable, measly $1,000. Oh, by the way, the United Nations already has 5 disaster assessment teams on the ground in Burma.
But we can't trust the United Nations. You know, there's a lot of communists there and people who aren't properly capitalistic. Oh, capitalistical.
Really, I'm not kidding. And the $250,000. Let's go back to the previous estimate that I saw, 80,000 dead. Assume that all of those 80,000 left one dependent, horrified and stricken and shocked beyond words, who will, if they live to be 100 years old, never, ever have a day when what happened when the cyclone hit doesn't go through their mind. Shocked, traumatized, horrified, wondering with some degree of candor whether or not life is worth living anymore. Assume that each victim left only one survivor. Now do the math. I'm reasonably capable at simple mathematical functions, adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, and what I see when I divide 80,000 into 250,000 is that the United States, if Burma meets conditions, if Burma dances to the tune that we call, if they got any oil, the United States, via its compassionately conservative president, is willing to pony up $3 and change per survivor. In other words, we're willing to pony up roughly what we give a poor person in America to eat on one day. $3. That's what your average Burmese disaster survivor is worth to George Bush. That's pretty tough. At least we're paying families in Iraq who get slaughtered by our military there, and didn't necessarily deserve it. You know, like, you know, say your daughter gets dragged out into the street and gang raped for a few hours and is left bleeding and with the life running out of her in the middle of the street, and then they come in and blow your granddaddy's brains out. Well, that's good for at least a couple of $1,000 in Iraq. But a Burmese storm survivor, $3. Hoo-wee! Don't spend it all in one place, sweetheart. I remember when the tsunami hit, and I thought that that was a pretty hard-hearted, crappy response when the Bush administration came out and said, well, I will send them $1.95. But this tops it. Five disaster assessment teams already on the ground in the country, but that's not good enough because they're not on the federal repig lick and take. Anybody gone over to look at the Blackwater site lately? Is there anything on there about disaster assessment? How about KBR? Any disaster assessment stuff in their mission statement? This is just too easy to see which way the evil would manifest itself. But that's just the tip of the iceberg this evening. And frankly, I gotta tell you, I don't have the stomach to play any more Pickles Bush, and you can't make me. So we'll just take that as read. But God Almighty, $3 a victim. At best, if there were two survivors for every corpse, you're down to $1.50. For somebody whose home is gone, for somebody whose family is gone, for somebody whose entire world is gone. Three survivors, you're down to $1. Of course, you know, I guess the upside for the Bush administration is that there's probably a whole lot of folks where the entire family disappeared. So that would obviously mean that I'm engaging in some liberal hyperbole. Right? Yeah. That's a starting place for this evening. Anything you've got on your mind, you are welcome to bring to the fore as well. Preferably as long as it has nothing to do with the primaries. I never, ever, ever limit conversation on this program, but I will tell you honestly this evening, I ain't up for it. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Big storm's coming soon. I passed out in my hammock and got a slip to way past noon. Stood up and tried to focus. I hoped I wouldn't have to look far. I knew I could use a Bloody Mary, so I stumbled next door to the bar, and now I must confess I could use some rest. I can't run at this pace very long. Yes, it's quite insane. I think it hurts my brain, but it cleans. There's something about this Sunday, it's a most peculiar grave. Strolling down the avenue that's known as 818. Feeling tired, then I got inspired. I knew that it wouldn't last long. So sat on my beach and then I made up this song, and now I must confess I could use some rest. I can't run at this pace very long. Yes, it's quite Well, the wind is blowing harder now, 50 knots or thereabouts. There's white caps on the ocean, and I'm watching for water spouts. It's time to close the shutters, it's time to go inside. In a week I'll be in Gay Perry. That's a mighty long airplane ride. And now I must confess, I can use some rest. I can't run at this pace very long. Yes, it's quite insane. I think it hurts my brain, but it cleans me out, and then I can go on. Yes, it cleans me out, and then I can go on.
Sounds positively therapeutic, doesn't it? I don't think that translates into Burmese. 29 minutes before the hour as we cruise through the first hour of the program this evening, and it is prayer meeting, so if you've got something of a religious bent that is driving you absolutely crazy, this is the time to deal with it. Let's do, by all means, take it to the Lord in prayer, so to speak. Let's talk about Father Vincent Inametti, age 48, who will be doing some time now. Vincent Inametti, Father Vincent Inametti, you know, priest Vincent Inametti, is on his way to the big house. He was working as a priest in the Federal Medical Center, Carswell, in Fort Worth, Texas, for about 7 years. He pled guilty this past November to two counts. Count them. Two counts. Of sexual abuse of a ward. Because I guess when you, wait a minute, this isn't a prison, this is a hospital. Ew. Well, okay, it's kind of a prison. It's a women's prison in Texas. This Federal Medical Center, Carswell, in Fort Worth, Texas. Because the women were deemed, at that point in time, wards of the state. Charming. The two women were in this correctional institution of some sort for, of course, what else? Drug charges. One of them was in Father Inametti's choir and Bible study classes. The other one was his clerk, and he seduced them both. His archdiocese did not release a statement, but it did, however, it was heard breathing a huge sigh of relief because the women were at least not children. No kidding. So he is going to the big house. He's going to spend some time making, you know, big rocks into little rocks. Nah, he'll go to, you know how it is, he's a priest. He'll go to some club-fed affair. And, of course, no, all kidding aside, the Fort Worth Diocese has said, he ain't one of ours! Oh, no. He's a member of a Nigeria-based religious order called the Missionary Society of St. Paul. Really? We've got Nigerian missionaries coming to the United States. Among other things, he was given limited faculties to hear confessions and offer mass in the prison. It's beautiful, isn't it? Organized religion. sweet and comforting. Two witnesses were called by the defense, and they claimed that the victim, one of the victims, was in love with Father Inometti, and that the two lovers were the two suitors were fighting over one man. That's right. You know how it is. Women can't control themselves. That's why they can't be trusted to be, you know, priests or anything in the church. That's why there's 2,000 years worth of hate and bigotry against women in the church. Now, like I said, he's going to do 7 years. And he looked at the federal judge and he said, "I'm asking this morning for mercy." Oh. Now, mercy you get at the church, Buster. Supposedly. Not that you were given a lot of mercy to the two women that you seduced in prison. Justice, hopefully, is what happens in the court. The sentencing judge went beyond calling it sex abuse of a ward. He called it, he said, "This is rape and this is sodomy." The judge said Inometti's crimes were surprisingly heinous and that he had violated a twofold trust as an employee of the federal prison and as a priest. The priest had an audience for his sentencing. Some of them came forward to testify, and they said that his crimes were inconsistent with the majority of his life's work, and that priests are merely men and susceptible to physical temptations. Jesus, what is this, the thorn birds? So, it's a pity he'll probably wind up going to Club Fed. Because while I do believe in concepts of mercy and grace, not necessarily, you know, the stuff they preach in the mega churches and whatnot, I believe humans are capable of mercy and grace. Ernest Hemingway said something like, the greatest moment in a person's life is when they display grace in the face of death. But this is not one of those moments. You remember when Flush Flimbaugh called for drug abusers to be thrown in prison and the key thrown away? And then wept and wailed and moaned and groaned and put himself in rehab and, "On my friends, I am going deaf." They only want the mercy when it is for themselves, it would seem. Now, from Fort Worth, we get on our horse and we travel west. We travel west to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And a guy, I love how the God of Irony gives appropriate names to appropriate situations. Mark Levine was talking about Loving versus Virginia at the end of his program. The case that struck down miscegenation laws. Well, in this case, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, there was an apocalyptic sect in northeastern New Mexico who got taken down this past Tuesday and was charged with felony sex crimes against children. Let's all stand up and sing a chorus of Nearer My God to Thee, shall we? We're talking about Wayne Bent. Yeah, Wayne Bent, who should probably change his name to Wayne Twisted. But no, Wayne Bent goes by the name of Michael Travesser. I don't know. There's no... The Associated Press did not give a pronouncer with this. T-R-A-V-E-S-S-E-R. Wayne Bent, otherwise known as Michael Travesser, Travesser, claims to be the Messiah. Now, that alone makes me think that he needs to have a steel cage death match. Only one comes out victorious with the Reverend Moon, because he says he's the Messiah. Moon, of course, has the money to back it up. He has acknowledged, Wayne Bent has, or Michael Travesser, whatever, he's acknowledged having sex with his followers. Well, of course. I'm a man of God. That's how I pass my holiness along. Sorry, there's no quote there, but you know how these people operate. He is at present being held on $500,000 bond at the Union County Detention Center in Clayton, New Mexico. He's due to be arraigned. He is due to be arraigned tomorrow. Or as some buddies of mine used to refer to it, they're going to arrange him. Oh, he's going to get arranged, all right. The affidavit for the arrest says that Wayne Bent engaged in touchings in 2006 and 2007 with three little girls, all under 18, one of them 12 years old. By the way, the name of the church is the Lord Our Righteousness Church. And as is the case with cults, they can't stand living in areas that they can't stand living in the sinful, dirty, heathen world, so they moved out to the middle of nowhere. It's described as a remote former ranch near the Colorado line. The State Children, Youth, and Families Department had recently removed two girls and one boy from the site and said it was interviewing a third girl who had left the compound earlier. The three girls' names were the same names cited in the affidavit. Wayne Bent has a grown son by the name of Jeff Bent who said my daddy was arrested on false charges, because, see, Jeff Bent gets to be the Messiah after Wayne Bent is done being the Messiah. Bent does, in fact, say that, you know, he's gotten it on with his daughter-in-law, that he's lain naked with virgins, and said that the virgins asked him for sex, but he refused. Oh, God. Mandrake, they all want my precious bodily fluids, but I deny them. He also did his own posting on the so-called church's website. Said there was no molestation of children or adults. They call their little weirdo cultish compound Strong City. About 50 people live on the former ranch. Yeah. Wayne Bent, Michael Travesser, Messiah guy, says the children have been kidnapped. This is, okay, here's his quote. Everybody, take a strong drink of something, because this is gross. Jesus had not committed any crimes, so the authorities had to invent some crimes to crucify him over. It is the same for me also. I have committed no crimes, but many crimes are being imagined and concocted in the minds of men to try and kill me again. Never mind the fact that he ended his sentence with the preposition. The preposition he ended the sentence with was again, he's Jesus! And Jesus lives a few miles from the Colorado line on a compound with about 50 people in it, including some underage little girls with whom he likes to share his holiness. Now, you want an example of just how stupid religion can be? This cat predicted, no, really, this cat predicted the apocalypse on August the 31st of last year, and he still has followers. That is the power. Right there, right there, right there. That is the power of religion. You can stand there in the pulpit every day, every Sunday, every time they'll sit down and listen to your crazy babblings, and you can tell them in unequivocal terms, the world is going to end on Halloween 2007. And November 1st, 2007 comes around, and they're still there, the followers. And they're still doing what you want to. Brothers and sisters, I must test my faith. I need to lie down with some virgins this evening. And you wonder why I am the way... No, some of you don't. Some of you do. Some of you seem to think that... But I... This is the power of religion. He said, no uncertain terms, no caveats, no if the sun comes up and there is an eclipse and a bat flies across the moon, then it will end on October 31st. No, the world will end on October 31st. 2007, I'm telling you this because I am Jesus. And everybody gets up on November the 1st and they stay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was using some 2,000-year-old mathematics, and it's only a function of the failure of the calendar as promulgated by Gregory the Great.
What?
So... Yeah, it's a lovely night for prayer meeting. Dead and drowning in Burma. A priest in Texas who's caught rifling the church secretary's drawers. And out in New Mexico, Wayne Bent. Lying with virgins. Well, it doesn't mean I was having sex with them. It meant I was telling them lies. That, don't you understand? Sometimes you have to do that when you're a Messiah. Oh, Lordy, Lordy, Lordy. But that's not all. Oh, there's quite a raft of stuff available to us this evening. By the way, do you remember a few months ago when all the right-wing radio shows... were having a hissy and the Department of Homeland Security was having a hissy and George Bush was having a hissy and Dick Cheney was having a hissy and all the terrified people who were just sure that Osama is going to bomb their own personal Walmart tomorrow were having a hissy about the mysterious men on the ferry in the Pacific Northwest. Remember that? They were described as being looking Middle Eastern. And they were seen taking pictures and demonstrating suspicious behavior on the ferry boat. And then they mysteriously disappeared. They probably went back to their sleeper cell, waiting, waiting, waiting until they receive the word from the 6'6" dude in the cave in Afghanistan with the portable dialysis machine. And we were all terribly nervous. Well, I wasn't, and you weren't, but you were supposed to be. We were. Because this is the coward nation. For any brand new right-wingers in the audience, before you start hopping up and down, that's C-O-W-E-R-E-D, nation, coward nation. Huddled into a little ball, sucking our thumbs and trembling in fear of the thirst. We all know that there's, well, goodness gracious. They were taking pictures in Washington State on a ferry boat. They had to be terrorists, didn't they? Well, it turns out, no, they didn't. Special agent in charge, Laura Laughlin, said it turns out that these two guys, see, there's these two guys, it's like the setup to a joke. There's these two guys, and they go to Washington State and get on a ferry boat. Yeah, they had a couple of days off in the middle of July, and they decided to ride a car ferry that crosses, what, Puget Sound or something? And in a stunning display of what? A lack of understanding of the times in which they live, they took photographs while on the ferry boat so that they could, oh my God, show them to friends and family back home. And back home, by the way, just happened to be Germany. They are European business consultants who were on a trip to Seattle. They were probably wearing sandals with socks. FBI agents have seen the photos and found them to be innocuous, as were the pair's business activities. They showed up at a U.S. embassy overseas and identified themselves last week, and they damn sure weren't going to do it in the United States because they feared getting arrested and shipped to Guantanamo. They gave embassy officials documentation of their identities, what their jobs were, the reason they were in the United States last summer. It was August when photos of the mysterious, swarthy-looking, Middle Eastern-looking men were taken by Washington State Ferries employees and released to the news media for breathless coverage. Asking people, please, have you seen these men? Have you seen these photograph-taking men? They could take your Bible and kill your mama tomorrow. They might be terrorists. Because they, quote, showed an inordinate interest in the operation of the shipboard systems. Oh, dear God. That means that they were looking around. Hans, this is a very interesting vessel. How do you suppose the propulsion system works? By Ulrich, I do not know. Let us go to the back of the boat and have a look. This poor, poor country. This poor, pathetic, terrified, bedwetting country. We are now literally terrified of German tourists. Okay, no, they were described as residents of a European Union country. Oh, I get it. Wait a minute. They're Turkish. Oh, for pity's sakes. Anticipating a backlash and wishing to avoid misrepresenting these people in any way, Special Agent in Charge Laughlin said it was a difficult call. We reached a point in the investigation where we were stymied, could get no further. This was the last resort, to try and identify these individuals and have them explain their apparently suspicious behavior. For heaven's sakes. embarrassing when I think of the bravery and the courage displayed by generations upon generations of Americans in war and in peace, here and abroad, to realize that we are now in a time and a place where we are terrified of swarthy-looking men who are curious because they are riding on a boat for the first time in their lives. I realize how pathetic we have become. Look at them over there, Ethel. Have you ever seen any more dangerous, terrorist-looking people in your life? Look at them. Got shoes on with socks. Sandals. Damn, Ethel. They got me so scared I can't talk. We're a national joke. No, we're an international joke. We are a joke as a nation. We could blow the world. We have, at this moment, we have the power to blow up the entire planet several times over. And we're wetting our pants over tourism. It beggars belief that the country that helped to stop the spread of global fascism now has a national hissy over a couple of guys taking pictures on a boat. You know, it's kind of like whatever this terror does to us, it is almost as though we richly deserve it. Oh, my God, he said we deserve 9/11. He's just like that Reverend Wright. Oh! Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, is that you? This is me.
That's me. Is that you?
That will be me. Every time you play the Christmas baby, it always conjures me up. You know that. that's as close to prayer as I can get. That was a good cut. Thank you. It made me cry as usual. He's so good. Did you just discern that they're from Turkey because it said the EU country?
Well, EU country and how many? Okay, they get. No, I'm guessing. There's a large there's a large Turkish population in Germany.
Yeah, really.
That stems back to the alliance during the First World War, all of that stuff. Yeah.
Right. But they were brown.
Yeah.
But that they should have gone.
They could have been Spaniards.
They could have been. Yeah. Right. I'm interested.
Or Greeks.
Could have been. They could have been Indians from Britain too.
True enough.
What? Whatever. They were still brown. That's the point.
Right.
That ferry ride is just wonderful. They should have been down below decks eating clam chowder. That was always a cheap date. You can get on the ferry and ride. You pay to get on and then get...
What, does it go across Puget Sound or something?
Yeah. You can go to Bremerton or Bainbridge Island. Or, depends on the boat. But you can go to Bremerton and get back on. You can walk back on for free. And so you only have to pay fare one way, and then the clam chowder is just kick-ass. I mean, oh, my God. And that was always a cheap date for me. I would take somebody out and say, let's go out to dinner. Because you pay about $1.25 to get on the boat and then pay about, $2.
How much do you suppose of the clam chowder was ambiance? How would you feel if you knew that they were emptying it out of Campbell's cans back in the galley?
Well, I knew they weren't because it came from down on the dock. It came from Ivor's clam chowder house.
Okay.
I mean, it would have been okay.
Do you see what an elitist I have become?
Depends on who the date was, too. I mean, where do you want to go with this? I mean, whatever. I wanted to get back to New Mexico to the Seventh-day Adventists. Those people are very strange and way up there on the border of between Raton and Clayton is spooky, long road that goes out in the middle of nowhere. Then all of a sudden there's a little rest area. And you get out of the car and the truck and it says watch out for snakes.
Nice.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Why not just abandon hope, all ye who enter here?
Yeah, right. Does it flush? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Anyway, that big old, I heard somebody describe a big old, quite old compound out there. They must have changed it considerably because it used to be just a big old trailer park and at Strong City, and they'd all go up there and camp and do their Seventh-day Adventist stuff. And then
they're Seventh-day Adventurers?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, well, that's what the old man started out to be. I don't know if they still are or not. But then they got to take their little white asses down to Yuma for the winter because it's too cold up there at the base of the Rockies. And so they all moved, the whole trailer park moves to Yuma, Arizona. And then,
well, that probably explains why he needed to lie with the virgins. Virgins are known to be at least 10 degrees warmer than the average non-virgin.
I don't know. I don't even want to get...
Bundle up!
I don't want to go there. I don't know. Yeah, bundle up. And thank you for bringing it. What I really called about was to tag on to the Buffett cut. The hurricane season's coming up again, and when I heard Mrs. Bush make her little rant, I choked. I just said, what? You know, who is it that says vomit in the back of your throat? Is that really
that's Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie Miller? Okay.
Yeah. Ooh, I think I just vomited a little bit in the back of my throat. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that was exactly where I went with that. And because I thought, she's so much in a hurry to get to Burma, and she can't even pronounce it right.
Myanmar?
Yeah. I was not going to go there.
You know, back behind the curtain in the briefing room, Pickles, just say to yourself, my Aunt Martha. And take out the T and the T-H-A. My Aunt Martha. Myanmar.
Yeah, right. Oh, God.
Or, I don't know, you get a couple of margaritas and some Darvons and pickles, and it probably, my Aunt Martha probably comes out, Myanmar.
The mess that's going on down on the coast is getting worse because you mentioned Bryce, and I wanted to bring up to folks if they wanted to find out more about what's going on or keep abreast of what's happening, you might want to tune in and stream the morning program between 9 and 11 Central Time. Is this Central Time? Yeah, Central Time every morning. And sometimes if he's late getting back to the FEMA cramper with the newspaper on Wednesday and Saturday, he gets on about 10 minutes late, but there's always good music leading into it, so people can keep abreast or check out what's going on because he talks a bit. They've had two or three real good shows the past 3 days that people are calling. People are starting to call in now, and now that he's got his phones up and running, except he can't pay the phone bill, so he's hoping for a miracle for that. So anyway, the fraud and the incompetence that's happening is getting worse and worse, and now the county and the state are trying to bring in this. They've got a 128-page fine print comprehensive growth plan that's just astounding.
Well, in these circumstances, Kate, whenever I hear growth or growth plan, I think cancer.
Yeah.
Because they want uncontrolled,
exactly,
unrestrained growth.
Yeah, right. That's exactly. And I think Wade called in when Bryce was on the air with you. Wade's up in arms, and
he's going back
out on an oil platform now, but he's leaving tonight, but he'll be back in about 3 weeks. But he's doing the studying and the research out on the platform on his off hours, and so they're just Bryce's case file was still not in the hands of his case manager. Don't know where it went. Looks to me like, I told the Red Cross disaster relief person, that I think it looks like the Chamber of Commerce or the Board of Supervisors trying to run him out, and they're just not doing anything. He got denied for the MDA grant, whatever that means, and I forget MDA. And FEMA has turned, I was told by a person who works down there, about this is her fourth or fifth time down on Habitat, that FEMA told the Methodist relief people, UMCOR, United Methodist something, something, told UMCOR that they can have, the FEMA said to the Methodists, the Gulf Coast is yours. Have at it.
Goodbye. See you later.
Luckily, they gave it over to somebody, if that's in fact true, because it, and it looks to me, now I put things back together, I look back and think, well, yeah, that's how come they're, and they're there too, and they've got more funding, and I'm not, they're not getting any funding from, I mean, they're totally, 501c3, but, luckily FEMA gave it over to somebody who does a good job, you know. And I also heard Wade say this morning that he's kind of on the fence about this immigration thing, about these illegal things, because he said my dad had two different contractors come in and work on the house, and they messed it up, and they wouldn't do what they were told to do, and they just made it, so he just run them all off. And the next week he hired a crew of illegals, and they came in and they worked 8 hours. They didn't break for lunch, but they worked 8 hours and left. They came back and they got the house done in a hurry, and it was excellent work. And he said, without the illegals, my dad would still be living in a little rat trap. And so he said, I'm kind of on the, and I've heard more people say that about the people coming in, the Latino people coming in from all over South and Central America and Mexico and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, God forbid that should get so-called mainstream news coverage, though. That there should, God forbid there should be some sort of positive coverage of the impact these folks have on our society, because that's a positive impact.
It is.
And you know, that's why organizations like the Carpenters Union actively recruits Latino workers.
Uh-huh.
I remember seeing one of the union magazines, half's printed in English, other half's in Spanish.
Yeah, very good.
Beautiful thing, you know.
Well, the big station, the big Kaboom 870 WWL, out of New Orleans, I forget what it is.
WWL.
Like. Okay, WWL had, they have a call, a really nice call-in show in the evening about 8 o'clock till midnight. And a lot of people, that's where I first heard it, and my jaw dropped open, because I've heard more persons say, if it weren't for the illegals down here, if it weren't for the Mexicans, we would never get rebuilt. So there's a huge, and they're taking over, they're bringing in their food, lots of little restaurants around town, around New Orleans, that is very cool. and there's a lot of really good Mexican restaurants or Spanish restaurants going up along the Gulf Coast that weren't there before, so they're having a positive impact on the population or the infrastructure. But thank you for bringing up a WQRZ, because 103.5, stream it on the, go to the homepage and go to the MP3 streaming, not the other, there's two, but go to the MP3 and you can stream it in the mornings at 8-9 o'clock central. And sometimes they get a little bit crazy, and they talk real fast, and they can't hardly understand.
Southerners talk fast?
Well, Bryce does, and then when Bryce and Wade got on the other morning, I mean, it was crazy. It was a lot of fun. I mean, you had to have been there, but whatever. But anyway, I'm fixing to drag up and head out of Dixie and head toward head west into the head into a headwind, and $3.85 a gallon gas, and so
that's scary.
Huh?
That's scary. $3.85 a gallon gas and a headwind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the big pickup truck.
It's not a big truck. It's a little truck. So I get about 27 usually, and I get 25 going west. So.
Well, thank heaven for small favors, or the universe, or whatever. By the way, an email rolled in noting the accuracy of your description of that ferry ride. And he says, and if you time it right and go back to Seattle at sunset, breathtakingly beautiful.
It is, and especially if you're eating clam chowder with a pretty lady on the deck. Woo-wee! Take your freaking breath away. Can we do this again tomorrow?
I want to come back.
Yeah, can we do this again? How do y'all know about this anyway?
So are you gonna be incommunicado for a while or?
Yeah, I think so. I'm probably gonna drag up on Friday morning early and head out.
Well, I promised you no primary news, and I've pretty much gotten through an hour and 10 minutes of the program without it.
Yeah, right. I just thought I'd check in with the crazy trailer park freaks up in northern New Mexico, and it's truly a beautiful, beautiful ride across there from Raton to Clayton down into Delhart, Texas. But I mean, only if you don't get bored when you're by yourself driving across the desert, the high desert. So anyway.
Well, with all the voices in my head, I'm never alone when I'm by myself.
I'm never alone. People always always get concerned that I'm by myself. And, well, don't you ever get lonely or don't you ever get bored? And I think, shit, no, I get bored when I got somebody with me.
That's too many people trying to keep the conversation going.
I always keep a pad and paper on the seat beside me so I can write down a thought or something. And I've got journals that I can't even read because I was writing them when I was driving. But anyway,
I got to tell you, and I know you're on your minutes, so we'll go quickly.
No,
but
my minutes are fine.
You struck a nerve with Peter Godbold, a comment in the chat room. Trailer park freaks.
That's a whole show of prayer meeting. Yeah, we could have. Oh God. Oh my! They're everywhere. But anyway, I guess the Jimmy song struck a nerve with me because it's like just tired. You had a suicide. Just settle down. Let me finish this paragraph. The kid that committed suicide, his mama said, he said he'd wake up angry every morning and his body was back in the war and his mind was back in the war. And I kind of shuddered and I thought, oh, shit. I thought I was going to get out of the Gulf Coast without disaster fatigue this year, but I'm not going to. So.
Now, that one kind of pushed me over the line, too. Because,
yeah.
And I guess it doesn't mean as much to, no, that's coming out the wrong way. Let me stop that right now. I guess it has a special resonance to me because it comes from somewhere I know. I don't know these people, but I know the region.
Oh, yeah.
And
up in northern Alabama?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, this young man committed suicide in front of his mama.
Yeah, right. It's stuff like this that just puts me out over the line when they want to talk about spending more money, more troops, more. I don't even want to. Okay, full stop. Where I was going with that was that I kind of shivered because I frequently wake up angry and I wake up, my body is still on the coast. Bryce is free McCramper. Or working with JR on the computer, or going to the grandma's house that still has black mold in her living room and her big dining room with the piano and all the kids' pictures in it, and the other grandma whose roof leaks, and I wake up there is, I take them to bed with me. I mean, I know how to let go and stay balanced and all that, but no, I'm not suicidal. That was not the point. The point was, I didn't realize, I was hoping I could get out of the Gulf Coast this winter without disaster fatigue, but it's not going to happen. So I stop in Amarillo and have lunch 4 times with my friend who was the Oklahoma City bomb relief, crisis disaster fatigue. I'm hanging up here.
Oh, okay. All right. Bye.
My battery's dying.
Yeah, sounds like it is. Thanks, Kate. Drive careful. Oh, it looks like we're back to that place in Kate's world where communications become a little dicey and dodgy and entirely at the mercy of, can you hear me now, Verizon? No, we can't hear you now, Verizon. You've got crappy service. Oh, okay, but then, okay, Verizon never will advertise with the horn. Not that we wanted them. But yeah, I get some of that. PTSD is PTSD, and there doesn't have to be gunplay involved for it to be there. That's part of the offensive thing about Laura Bush, Myanmar. course, then again, you'd be drinking Cuervo through a straw if you were married to George W. Bush, too. But that's one of the things that gets me about how utterly, brutally, deliberately insensitive and uncaring her remarks were. We have an entire geographic region of the United States that is nothing but one great big concentration of post-traumatic stress disorder. But that's not enough, because now we're guaranteeing another 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 that we're just going to scatter throughout the United States whenever we decide to end this stinking Iraqupation. It's nasty. Al Gore, and I'll go to the phones here in a second. Al Gore made a remark, and maybe we'll run the audio just to give it that extra resonance later in the program. Al Gore said something yesterday in a conversation with Terry Gross. See, Terry Gross can get Al Gore. I can't get Al Gore. See, that's called professional jealousy. I'll go to the phones just in a second, so if you're on hold, please stay that way. I'll be right with you. But just hear what Al Gore said. God, I wish he was running for president. But that's another show. Oh, I've got the wrong button. Never mind. Hold on just a minute. We'll make this work. I need a producer.
Say if John McCain was elected president, what would his options be in terms of dealing with President Bush's signing statement?
Well, the reason you're having trouble with it is that it's contrary to the American system. And in my view, not only would that signing statement not bind the next president, it is not legal as a statement of law. Where the current president is concerned, it is a raw assertion of authority outside the boundaries of the law.
But who would decide that it's officially legal or illegal? Nobody's officially thrown it out saying this is illegal.
Well, that's correct. And in our system, the ultimate arbiter of what is constitutional, since Marbury versus Madison in the first decades of our republic, has been the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court does not take all cases and has been often timid where this president's arrogation of authority to himself is concerned. But even where they have not been timid, where, for example, they ruled that the Clean Air Act requires President Bush and his EPA administrator to regulate global warming pollution as pollution under the Clean Air Act. And the executive branch has nonetheless refused to comply with the Supreme Court decision. And ultimately, the guarantor of our freedoms are
this is the important
the
part.
People. And these kinds of outrages, a president saying that he has the right to overturn George Washington's 200-plus year prohibition against torture and torture anyone he wants with his assistants gathered in the basement of the White House, according to recent revelations, personally reviewing the kinds of torture techniques being used prisoner by prisoner. It's obscene.
Yeah, Al, it is. It is. It is obscene. It is pornographic. It is sickening. It is, here, it's prayer meeting. Un-Christian, un-Jewish, un-Muslim, un-Daoist, un-Jainist, un-Buddhist, un-any kind of religion you can pick out. You know, among other things, the Native Americans were amazed the area now known as Mexico, when the Spanish and their Catholic priests came along and started burning people to death. And this was a culture that routinely engaged in human sacrifice that involved plucking the still beating heart out of a living victim. They were appalled at the idea that you would burn someone alive. Not as a gift, not as a gift to bloodthirsty gods that is required, which was what they were doing, but as a means of punishment. And it is obscene. And I've come to the conclusion that Al Gore is too damned smart to be president or want to be president. Because right now, wanting to be president is like wanting to be the captain of the Titanic after it's hit the iceberg. But that's me. Let's go to the phones.
Good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I thought I'd call in since I called in to Scott, to John's last night.
Cool.
I just wanted to recommend once again that next week, a new Al Green, Lay It Down. You got to go get it.
Okay.
Everyone should get it. That's the
I haven't heard you take on this kind of missionary zeal over a piece of music. I don't think ever, David.
Yeah, you would think that I was getting paid for this.
I'm thinking you should be.
Well, there's a different discussion on that. I mean, I still think that Al Green's album is an amazing piece of work for all generations. It bridges the gap of the new generation of musicians and artists with the generation of Al Green, and it shows where you can take that creativity and with what 2.5 years of work will show for it. And it's an amazing album. It's 11 tracks. I don't know how many tracks they did in all the sessions, which I would love to hear it all. And I did hear a demo of it, and I was surprised at how far they took it on the album. And like I said, every musician on there, every little piece, every little component, there's nothing that's going to be able to beat it. It's pretty much game over for everyone else.
Just mail him the Grammy now.
You just mail him the Grammy. Give him the gold statues. You know what? Make it official, Bob. Make him hand over Greenland to him now, because he owns that place now. He owns Greenland. Because, like I said, it's just it's that impressive. It's that amazing. And if I get someone else to get it, you could probably go to Deep Discount and get it off Blue Note. Yeah, it's amazing, and I just want to once again plug that. And
well, I know of at least two converts you've got.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, me and Patrick.
Oh, that's good. So you've heard it. You've heard the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And you agree with me.
In its genre, it is a dandy.
Yeah, that is no. Again, it's a.
And what you mentioned before, when you compare it to the dreck that he put out when he was being a Christian recording artist.
Oh yeah, I mean they totally just. I mean, so many Al Green fans, they just fled for the hills. So what does that tell you? You know what it tells me? It tells me that maybe it's not wise to listen to the Christian music industry.
Cause... Well, I remember. See, this is back. Okay, backstory. All right, real quick.
Yeah.
As everybody knows, I got my start in radio at a gospel radio station, and I pulled 5 hours a night, 5 days a week, and it conveniently kept me under the labor laws. But I said, yeah, that's about what, you know, if you had a high school job, it was kind of like that. So I was doing 25 hours a week. I was doing 7 p.m. to midnight, and from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Let me think about the format clock. 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. was nothing but that atrocious, you know, Happy Goodman family. Dropkick me, Jesus, through the goalposts of life. Oh, goalposts of life. You know, that stuff.
Yeah.
And but at 10 o'clock, I got to add two contemporary Christian songs to the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have the Happy Goodman family and Al Green.
Nice.
And then at 11 p.m. I could play limited selections from the rock and roll Christian music. Oh.
You know, it could be worse, and I'm about to set up a punchline.
Well, wait. Okay, before the punchline, hang on to what you were going to do.
Okay.
But, you know, I remember that Al Green album, which was, I mean, dreck. but then there was another one. You know, I was listening to Billy Shears' show the other night, and he played a couple of tunes from America. And, of course, that America's Greatest Hits album resonates with me because it was the only cassette tape we had on it when I was a teenager, that spring break trip that I took to Italy, God bless my parents, with my Latin class. It was the only tape the bus driver had on the tour bus that went, you know, because it's named America. I'm sure American students will want, you know. So it was America's Greatest Hits all over the highways of Italy. You know, no soaring oratorios, no, you know, no pagliacci, no. It was America's Greatest Hits to the point that it is that album is permanently engraved into my brain. Dum ding a ding a ding a dum ding a horse with no name, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And then I got the job at the radio station the following year, and lo and behold, there's Dan Peek. Formerly of America, and he's gone all contemporary Christian. And he split with America. I think he came back to him for a little bit, and then he went away again.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those were the highlights of my night, getting to play the stuff that would not possibly even get pressed or let alone recorded in the real music industry. But by God, it was genius in the contemporary Christian music business. But then again, you know, some good things did come out of that because, well, you remember that other great album of the late, well, not remember because you weren't, but you're familiar with that other great multi-Grammy-winning album, Christopher Cross.
Oh, of course.
That was produced by Michael Omardian. And Michael Omardian was sort of the, he was the greatest producer of contemporary Christian music. I'm trying to come up with a good producer analogy, but it wasn't there for me.
Mm.
So that's where that was. Now, on to what you were going to.
Well, I say it could be worse. You could have been instructed to play Michael W. Smith's My Place in the World 12 times an hour.
I've got so much worse. Jesus, This Is Jimmy. One of these nights, if I can find it, maybe tonight, since it is prayer meeting.
Yeah. Oh, I know it's worse than that. If you had to sit through it, I know you know who I'm talking about. The guy who plays the piano by the fountain, Dino, on the Trinity broadcast.
Body blow. Oh,
yeah. I know. I would sit there and just be. I would be shocked by it. I'd be like, oh my God, is this guy on drugs? Is he seriously on painkillers or something? He's playing right next to a water fountain, and he's giving me the feeling like, but what he's playing, I'm like, I got to go to the bathroom now.
Oh, and the woman with the big hair that makes Tammy Faye look tasteful.
Oh yeah, that woman. Oh my God, there's so many people on TVN. You know, Bob, that's a whole thing that if I had money, I would invest in the Trinity Broadcast Network trading cards. Oh, my Lord. So many great characters. In so many bad ways. It's just the beauty of dysfunctional. Holy cow.
This is the network where Ben Stein shows up to talk about science kills people.
Yeah, I was amazed that they actually tried to get some kind of distribution for it. It almost that film bombed worse than Pathway to 9/11.
Or I was thinking Ishtar or Heaven's Gate.
Oh, Ishtar, or I don't know. I mean, I think
or Waterworld.
You know, I look at Ben Stein, I think, wow, his parents must have done a number on him. I'm guessing he grew up in Washington completely, and I'm guessing he grew in that bubble. And if you're privileged all the time, Bob, you start to have a privileged way of thinking. It really is true. And unfortunately, a lot of the privileged people are such, oh my God, they are such brilliant manipulators. It's unbelievable.
Oh, by the way, somebody finished the analogy for me. The Clive Davis of Christian rock.
The Clive Davis. Well,
or maybe the Todd Rundgren of Christian rock, or the Brian Eno.
Oh my God, there is a great, great, great interview. For those people who don't listen to Todd Rundgren Radio, you got to. They do this thing on Blog Talk Radio where they interview all of the people that are associated with Todd Rundgren. So they do Cassim Sutton, because I'm a TR fan, in case you guys didn't know. Yeah, I know. He I know that is going to put me on the block. And TR fan. But they interview this. They have this great interview with Andy Partridge with about 2 hours. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. If you go to Rundgren Radio, I'll send you the link and you can put it up there. But
you know, I like a lot of Todd Rundgren stuff.
Oh, but Andy just, oh, I do too. But here's the thing about Rundgren. He really has earned. He's like to do an analogy like Clive Davis Christian Rock. He really is like the Chevy Chase of art pop. He really is.
Yeah. Well, the firestorm that he created by the suggestion, and we've got to get you a woman.
Yeah. Andy tells this story. Oh, I kind of mentioned the story. Andy tells this story where, because Andy won't hold his tongue back with the people that he's worked with, and they wanted to ask him. He goes, so what was it like working with Todd? He's like, well, he's a great arranger, but he really, really needs to work on his personable skills. And he's like, what do you mean? He goes, I remember in the studio, I would come in, and he'd be taking the piss out of me, saying, are those denim jeans? And then I couldn't help thinking, but this wore gold lamé pants next to a pyramid giving me fashion tips. I was like, oh, my God, Andy.
Oh, 70s rock and roll clothing.
He's on Todd's blacklist automatically just from that alone.
Well, didn't Todd Rundgren produce an XTC album? Is it XTC
thinking? Yeah, Skylarking. He produced Skylarking. And that's what he's talking about, the sessions. And it's just great because...
yeah, because that damn near came to Homicide.
Yeah, when you listen to this interview, Bob, you're just going to be laughing constantly because Andy, no matter what color is, he will take on this side and not give people totally what they want to hear, but he'll give you that classic Andy Partridge side to him. And what he talks about Todd, I mean, I'm sure it angered a lot of Todd fans, but hey, he was talking the truth. That's why a lot of people...
Well, it's like, you know, I'm a big Ricky Lee Jones fan.
Yeah, if a lot of people really want to know the truth why Todd wasn't as big as Hall & Oates, I can tell you why. Because he needed to work on his personal skills. I'm sure Bearsville had the wrath of having to work with Rundgren as well. And they were like, you know what? Screw this guy. We're going to screw him for every penny in the world. Watch this, baby.
No, I was saying a big Ricky Lee Jones fan.
Yeah.
And she put out an album, probably... 20 years ago now, how time flies, called The Horses. And I was all excited about it because it had been produced by Walter Becker, you know, Steely Dan.
Oh, yeah, Steely Dan, yeah.
And it turned out that they were just the entire time. But it turned out to be a beautiful damned album. So, you know, sometimes that kind of stuff works out.
Well, I just wanted to leave you with one more thing.
Now, you realize now that I'm obligated to probably play some Christopher Cross now. And I'm going to hate myself for it.
You know,
I'm going to hate myself for it.
Have you? I've been interested in this guy, my friend, who's a... I don't know how you get this title, but he's like a CCMologist. But anyways, he knows like all the engineers and the producers. Like, yeah, that was Dan Huff, and he was in Giant, and he worked with Tommy Sims. And I was like, holy cow. I mean, that...
He's like the character Daniel can't remember the last name, Daniel something in the movie Diner, where he gets pissed off at his beautiful new wife because she can't remember the B side of a Clarence Frogman Henry 45.
Yeah. Or he's like Jack Black in High Fidelity.
Okay, yeah.
Or a Cusack or whatever. But anyways, since it is prayer night, I feel like I have to mention this to people. If you go on videogoogle.com, there is probably one of the most ingenious shows you're ever going to see based on religion, done in the clay animation style of Davy and Goliath. It's called Moral Oral.
Oh, I love Moral Oral.
Yes.
Did you see the episode where Moral Oral gets hooked on crack?
I have not seen that one. No.
It's a must find.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For all those people who haven't seen Moral Oral, and Bob, if people could send you sound clips, if they don't have any money, they can send you sound clips of Moral Oral sound bites to play for your show. But I just wanted to leave you with the Moral Oral thing, and then one last thing before I go. This is the quote of the day, I think, and it's going to echo and resonate to bring it back to the serious side. This is a quote. We take a look at the military buildup. We take a look at the rhetoric. We take a look at the diplomatic posturing. And I would say that it's a virtual guarantee that there will be a limited aerial strike against Iran in the not-so-near future or not-so-distant future. The focus is on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Command. And if this situation spins further out of control, you would see these aerial strikes expand to include Iran's nuclear infrastructure and some significant command and control targets.
You know what's really creepy, though, David?
Yeah.
They're trying to one-up each other now. Because, the right-wingers.
Yeah.
This is the kind of stuff that gives you the 3 a.m. cold sweats. One of them came out the other day and said, I think it was John Bolton, okay, or Michael Bolton.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I can't. Yeah.
He was either an ambassador or a really, really bad ballad singer. Came out and said, we must attack Iran now. We've heard it before. But that wasn't good enough. Because immediately after saying that, then former U.S. ambassador to the United States, the Bolton said the use of military force against Iranian training camps is really the most prudent thing to do, okay? So then American Enterprise Institute so-called scholar Michael Ledeen, and when you're an American Enterprise Institute scholar, that means, you put acid in your coffee, first thing in the morning so that, you've got Paisley Sky by, 8 a.m. He came out and said that Bolton is, he's too wimpy. Because we shouldn't just bomb Iran, we need to bomb Syria too.
Does that just
make you a little bit nuts?
Yeah, I'm gonna close with something of what I think Bolton should do, but I just want to tell people that quote is by Scott Ritter.
Wow.
It's on Democracy Now. I guess Amy talked to him April 28th, and you can just read the transcript really short. And it's, like I said, it's from April 28th.
No, because Scott was saying this kind of stuff when I sat down for a conversation with him a year ago.
Yeah, I know. Nothing just changed.
No. By the way, I am asked to inform you that, yes, Ben Stein grew up in the D.C. suburbs, i.e. Silver Spring, Maryland. Yeah. And as an added bonus for your next rousing game of Trivial Pursuit, he went to high school with Goldie Hawn.
Well,
I will never look at Goldie Hawn the same way again.
Well, to end on a funny note, I think I know the perfect job for John Bolton because he has lots of money, Bob. What I think he should do is he should be the executive producer, and this is going to make PTA pretty mad, but he should be the executive producer for a Boogie Nights 2.
Well, now. Wait a minute. I'm getting lost. John or Michael?
John Bolton.
Okay.
John Bolton.
Yeah, because of the porn stash?
Yeah. No, also because of his association with orgy clubs.
Oh, well, that too.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a porn stash, you have to have an association with orgy clubs. It's part of the charter.
Yeah. When you said stash, I was thinking of porn stash.
Yeah, like the hustlers under the mattress. Yeah, I mean the big porn mustache.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Now.
Okay. Hey, David, thanks for taking me all over the chart.
All right, later.
Later. Bye now. Bye. Another suggestion, the Trevor Horn of Christian Rock, Michael O'Mardian. Goodness me. So, and by the way, don't make me do this to you. I'm gonna.
I'm going to take a breath. Just because we mentioned this do you remember the pop orgy that surrounded the Christopher Cross album in 1980? Yeah, this. Oh.
Time Life Music brings you Light Rock. Remember those days in the early 80s before punk and new wave had really caught on, and you thought this was really cool when you were going out parking in your Mercury Matador? Well, I think the warm bath is run now, and I can just... And that wasn't a Mercury Matador, Bob, you idiot! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 emails. 6 emails. It was an AMC Matador.
You guys, no mercy. Nobody can't get a break. Of course, now I have to tell my official. Now he wasn't on that one, but the backing vocals for the really big hit that came off of that album. The one that started like this. Yeah, this one. Yeah, that one. That's all you're going to get. The backing vocals on that are by Michael McDonald, you know, of Doobie Brothers fame, the guy that ruined the Doobies. I was sitting in a job interview. I think it would have been spring of 1989. And the guy who was doing the interview was named Michael McDonald. And, you know, I just don't miss this kind of stuff. And let's set this up by understanding that wasn't going to get the job, knew I wasn't going to get the job, had to go to the interview, mailed it in from 900 miles out. But Michael McDonald, with one of those classic interview questions, says, "Bob, where do you see yourself in 5 years?" And I couldn't help it. It just got all over me. It was like being slain in the spirit in some snake handler church. And I looked at him and said, "Well, Michael, I don't know. Because I've got such a long way to go. Such a long way to go." And all my buddies thought that was just funny as hell that I quoted Michael McDonald singing the backing chorus to Ride Like the Wind to Michael McDonald, job interviewer. Oh, let's see. The Angry Architect says, "Bob, this song sucks. Don't make me come over there, because by God, I'll sort you out over it." Yes, it does suck. I got a private message from our news ninja, Gene, while it was running that said, "Before Iraq, you do realize it would have been considered torture, don't you?" I said, "Still is. Never mind the Megadeth or the Kiss or whatever they say that they're playing for the concentration camp victims at Guantanamo. I know better. I know that they're playing Air Supply and Christopher Cross." You would not believe the... I talk about stuff on this show that makes people, the hair stand up on people's, the back of people's necks. And it's horrifying, and we all just sort of sit there hunched over in our silence going, "Jesus, it can't be like this." I play Christopher Cross, and I get this flood of vulgarity. "That fat bag of... this sucks." And I get... "Why I Hate Bruce Hornsby. SOB sounds like Christopher Cross piano parts." Oh no, that's cold. He was a damn fine piano player there at the very end of the Grateful Dead. Bruce Hornsby, not Christopher Cross. But you know, I figured out where I was with Christopher Cross when he tried to sang that song about being between the moon and New York City. You know, you can be between Hoboken and New York City. You can be between Long Island or Staten Island and New York City. But the moon? I feel the same way about that I feel about that stupid song Wildfire, where the idiotic horse gets lost in a killing frost. You know, not lost in a 12-foot snow, a killing frost. Frost! And it gets lost. And it got lost in the frost because lost is what is the only thing he could rhyme. You get it. or MacArthur Park with that cake left out in the rain and never have the recipe again. And ew. All right. It is prayer meeting, by the way. And since I was telling that stuff, I don't think I have ever played this for you guys. But I was telling that story about the early days, you know, Bob's first job in radio. I mean, I did it all. The at the top of the hour, I read, you know, little low rent operation. This is 1979. This is 1980, and there's no such thing as a Christian satellite radio network yet. They hadn't picked up on that. So little pimply faced teenagers had to read the news at the top of the hour, and I was one of those. So I read five minutes of news at the top of the hour. And then I jocked some of the most god-awful music that you have ever heard in your life. I mean, you remember how much you hated this stuff the other night? Sebastian Cabot, actor, reads Bob Dylan, poet. You remember how much you hated
this?
Once
upon a time, you dressed so fine. You threw the bums a dime in your prime, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
People call, say...
Yeah, you really hated that. Here in about 60 seconds, you are going to be begging me to play you some more Sebastian Cabot, actor, reads Bob Dylan, poet. And I say that with absolute 110% guaranteed certainty. Because burned as if with some sort of laser into the medulla oblongata of my brain is a song. Because the 2 years that I was there at the Gospel Voice, I got a call every night from my very first radio groupie, who was 72 years old at the time. And she wanted to hear this song, and I had to play it for her. I went to the boss over this. He said, you know, you either play the song when she calls and requests it, or you go home. And I was certainly, you know, 16-year-old kids back then we had vinyl habits. And, you know, I was never the clothing guy or anything like that. And I got my paycheck, and I went to the record store. And you got to support your habit somehow, because, you know, working at the Gospel Voice is not going to do it. So I played the song every night, five nights a week, for 2 flipping years. Anybody out there familiar with Red Sovine? Come on back and talk to Teddy Bear. Okay, this is the Christian music version of that. Maybe, you know what, maybe we'll have to have, we should create a feature for prayer meeting where every Wednesday I play one of the songs that runs in an endless loop inside my poor psychotic brain from those 2 years at the Gospel Voice. But this is the top of the mountain. This is the pinnacle. And I owe either a debt of gratitude or a blood vendetta to our pal Lottie in the chat room for finding this. I've never done this to you before that I can recall. And some of you may think that I'm being entirely too frivolous because I'm not talking about the primaries. But I'm really, really not talking about the primary. Now, there's an ancillary issue that I intend to hit in a little bit. Maybe after this is over. Don't worry, this is only 6 minutes and 30 seconds long. And I don't care what you think you have heard in your life, you are not prepared for Bobby Grove. Email in from our pal Cindy. My favorite Christian rock band, Cartman on South Park, when he went into when he had a contest with Kyle for how much money he could earn with Christian crap compared to Kyle's boy band. I know you saw it. Oh yes, I did. And you have no idea how much reality. Yes, you do. You that's why you're because it's real. So now, I mean, if you ever sit around, and certainly, you know, I'm, God knows, no celebrity. You know, nobody's picking me up in the limo in the morning and, you know, taking me around to the back of the building, the studio, or anything like that. But if you ever listen to the program and you wonder, Golly, Ned, I wonder how Bob got to be that, especially on Prayer Meeting Edition when I'm, you know, just sort of losing it over the religion industry. How did Bob get that way? What made Bob like that? Poor Bob. Why is Bob such an ass? Well, this is the answer. This is Bobby Grove.
Follows night, night follows day. This old world keeps rolling along. What will your answer be? What can you say when Jesus beckons you home? His name was Jimmy. He wasn't very old, about 10 or 11 years since birth. But you wouldn't call life for Jimmy heaven on earth. He lived in a big town in the north part of the nation. His mom and dad had forsaken him, so he had to sell newspapers to stay off starvation. Now, Mom and Dad loved the nightlife, and Jimmy was too much bother. I wonder if they'll still feel the same way when they stand before my Heavenly Father. Now, down the street by an old gospel mission, Jimmy carried his papers one day. And he heard the preacher say, "Come to the altar. My Jesus will give you a new life and a better way." Jimmy's feet were cold, his eyes watering, and inside it might be safer. So Jimmy said, "I'll go in. If I see Jesus, I'll give him a paper." So he walked in and he sat down, and when the last altar call was given, Jimmy laid his paper bag on the altar and lifted his watery eyes toward heaven. And he said, "Jesus, this is Jimmy. Jesus, this is Jimmy. I guess you might say it was the only way the little feller knew how to pray." So from that day on, when Jimmy would go by the old gospel mission, he'd walk down the aisle, he'd lay his paper bag on the altar, and he'd lift his little face towards heaven, and he'd say, "Jesus, this is Jimmy. Jesus, this is Jimmy." Now one day Jimmy rushed to the little gospel mission. The preacher was having a counseling session, and Jimmy didn't realize that he was disturbing anyone with his unusual prayer. But the preacher came and took him by the arm and said, "Boy, can't you see that we're busy? Why do you keep interrupting us with that simple, unusual prayer? Jesus, this is Jimmy." Jimmy said, "Preacher, this is the only way I know how to pray. And I just want the Lord to know my name." But the preacher said, "That's not a good reason, son. You'll have to stop it just the same." So one more time, Jimmy was pushed aside. And he left with tears in his eyes. But he said, "I can make it." And he turned away, not knowing it was his last mile. It was a cold day, and Jimmy slipped from the curb. A big truck hit him on the run. The preacher inside caught a glimpse of the scene. Feeling bad about what he'd done, he rushed to the boy and took him in his arms, and to the nearest hospital they fled. And with doctors standing by, the preacher there too, they heard little Jimmy speak from his bed. Jesus, this is Jimmy. The doctor felt his pulse and turned to the preacher and said, his short life here on earth will soon be through. The preacher, with panic in his voice, said, my God, what can we do? All of a sudden, the room lit up with a strange and beautiful light, and seemed that someone was about to speak, but that someone was not in sight. The preacher cried, if Jimmy could only be well, my God, how it would please us. And it was then the voice spoke in a kind, gentle way. Jimmy, this is Jesus. Jimmy, this is Jesus. Suffer, little children, and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. Hey, follows night, night follows day. This old world keeps rolling along. What will your answer be? What will you say when Jesus beckons you home?
Oh, God. I haven't seen the chat room respond to anything like this in years. Jesus. Oh, what was that, Peter? Speed it up to 130 beats per minute with pitch correction and a drum track, and it still sucks. Oh, God. Woo! Oh. Oh, John Fox, where are you when we need you? Because, see, early in the song when he says, now, Mom and Dad love the nightlife, how can you not take that and just butt that up against, I love the nightlife, I got to boogie? You know, Peter says Glenn Rivera would you know, kick him out of the club and shun him forever if he asked him to remix it. But have you ever heard anything begging for, yeah, you're ready to go back to Sebastian Cabot now, aren't you? I told you. Peter Godbold, I am past words. And I love the fact that Jesus has reverb. Oh, on a really, really bad old solid-state amp, apparently, too. And then he got hit by the truck. Oh! I repeat, just so you'll understand, I had to play that every night for 2 years. There are still nights that Agnes, you know, shakes me by the shoulder and says, Bob, what's wrong? And it's that song playing in my brain again. It's just terrible. Oh, okay, Mom, Dad, if little Johnny's in the room, not Jimmy, mind you, but Johnny, if little Timmy or little Johnny or little Susie is in the room, run them out. This is an email. These are not my words. The bad news, this by email, the bad news, Bobby Grove is still alive and wringing money out of dumb shits. I'm guessing that's probably the encore track. Why I gave up country music. When I heard a truck smacked him, I thought, well, if a truck ended it, then why are we still hearing that whiny guitar? Didn't say nothing about mama, or rain, or trains, or prison. It is not the perfect gospel country and western song. Oh, help me. Oh, help me. One of these nights, oh, I better not. Yeah, okay, I'll go ahead and mention it because somebody will find it. One of these nights, I'll play Squire Parsons singing Beulah Land for you. Okay, the clock is running now. I said that at 8:04:52 Eastern Time. And what's the pool?
How long is it before Squire Parsons singing Beulah Land is in my inbox? Oh, dear God, Bobby Grove has a website. And Peter Godbold knows Squire Parsons singing Beulah Land. Everybody who goes to the little church in the Wildwood anywhere in America knows Squire Parsons singing Beulah Land. He used to live in the same county with me. I thought I'd gotten away from it all. I thought I'd gotten away from the Gospel Voice, and I moved to a little county in West Virginia. Started raising a family. And I was walking down Main Street in our little county seat town one day, and I see this poster, "In Concert, Squire Parsons! At the left-hand Civic Center." No, really, there is a left-hand West Virginia. There's also a Looneyville. And I thought, it's still haunting me. I'll never... Oh, well, thank you, Lottie. Love you too, brother. You can email Bobby Grove at revbgrove@aol.com. No. Okay, geez, it didn't even take a minute and a half. Here, let's just make this the program tonight. This may be the prayer meeting to end all prayer meetings. Here we go. I used to think YouTube was a pretty doggone good idea. Everything is on. Oh, YouTube.
I'm kind of homesick for that country which I'd never been before. No sad goodbyes will there be spoken, for time won't matter.
If time don't matter, could you just stop singing now? Is it just me, or does this guy sound like castrating day at the feedlot? Want to be in a heaven that's got this guy warbling along all the time? Just asking.
I must stay.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, when you think about it, this is a hell of a lot to ask of a 16-year-old for $3.35 an hour, isn't it? I think the song should be retitled Sweet Merciful End. Oh, God, that's just painful. Why does all the Christian celebratory music of the Deep South have to be so flippin' grim? Now, this is not... No, I will not play John Ashcroft singing The Eagle Is Sore. I won't. You can't make me. I used to... I don't know. This is what's that great classic of American literature, The Education of Somebody Adams, who wrote very stilted Victorian prose? Well, this is the education of Bob Kincaid. When I wasn't jocking at the radio station, I was the stage manager at my high school. And I made a little extra dough on the side by, you know, it was a high school that had one of those big old fancy, honest to God, full functional theatrical auditoriums. Beautiful thing, just beautiful. The only thing they forgot was the fly space. But anyway, so during the summer, I would stage manage and do the sound and the lights when the local school board would rent out the local school auditorium to the Church of Christ a cappella barbershop quartets and whatever that would come and sing to a packed house of 5,000 for three nights running. And I don't advocate young people abusing substance laws of their individual states. They were terrible mistakes. But you know what? I grew up in a dry county, and it was 11 miles from my hometown to the Tennessee state line. And at the Tennessee state line, they would sell anybody beer who was tall enough to get the money on the counter. And I remember getting me and my buddy, who were stage managing and doing the lights and the sound for these things, I remember getting done with that thing, taking the money that the Church of Christ had paid me, and I mean flying to the Tennessee state line for some, it was usually the little 8-ounce bottles of Miller. Because you gotta get that. It's not like washing a taste. It's not like when you said a dirty word and your mama puts the soap bar in your mouth, and when you finally get to take it out, you go and you wash the taste out of your mouth as fast as you can. You gotta wash that stuff out of your brain. So, like I said, if ever you have one of those moments, and Bob's acting a little strangely tonight. I wonder what made Bob the way Bob is. Just think, Jesus, This Is Jimmy, and Beulah Land, and a cappella off-key Church of Christ choruses. You pretty much have it in a nutshell. Email 16 and playing this crap. I'd rather muck stalls. Well, really, this is sort of the musical equivalent of doing that, isn't it? So it's about a quarter after 8 here on the East Coast. We've got about 41 minutes of the program left. And whatever's on your mind, you're welcome to bring to the table. along the lines of sort of trying to understand how things work and helping Democrats, liberals, and progressives get a handle on it. You know, we are miles behind, and we've talked about this before, we are miles behind in terms of understanding, comprehending, and most importantly, manipulating media. I'm sorry, but you have to talk about manipulating media as long as the Repiglicans are on the other side doing what they do. Because they are past masters at manipulating media. And we're so far behind the curve on that, we think we're on straight road. Case in point, from one of the right-wing news websites that sends me its stupid little alerts. A right-wing website with a poll that says, is it time for Hillary to quit? Vote here now. It's a right-wing news site. Why doesn't it say, I mean, because it has, basically, for the last 16 years, is it time for Hillary to be drawn and quartered? Vote here now. Headline, Rush Limbaugh blamed for Obama loss in Indiana. Hillary Clinton eked out a narrow victory over Barack Obama in the Indiana Democratic primary. I'm not talking about that part. But top Obama aides say Obama would have won if it were not for conservative radio host Flush Flembaugh. David Axelrod, Obama's top strategist, told reporters that he attributed Clinton's lead in Indiana to Limbaugh's Operation Chaos, his campaign to have Republicans cross over and vote for Clinton, to prolong the nomination fight and damage the Democratic nominee. Never mind the fact that the data doesn't support the claim. Among other things, let me hop over here real quick. I had it just a minute ago. Just a minute. Yeah, there's one we got to get to. Never mind. I think it was over at Think Progress. I don't see it right offhand, but there is statistical proof. It had nothing to do with it. But the point of what I'm bringing up is that when Obama, or when one of his chief advisors, top strategists, whatever you want to call them, mentions that flatulent gas bag Limbaugh, it does what Limbaugh wants. It legitimizes Limbaugh. Never mind that what he's advising is actually probably, arguably, felonious conduct that his stupid little ditto heads engage in. Never mind that. But Obama and his top advisors, and all of his advisors for that matter, need to remain silent on Limbaugh. Slamming Limbaugh and picking the putrescent meat off of Limbaugh's bones is my job. It's Malloy's job. It's everybody on the horn's job. It's Randy's job, even Schultz's job. Stephanie's job, Hartman's job, if he chooses to, you know, go for a wade in the cesspool. I generally think of Tom as being above that kind of stuff. I'm not. But what I'm getting at here is, Democrats to this day don't understand the value of this medium. This is message. If you want to call it message. I like to think I'm a little bit freer than most, but God, I would have been fired for playing either of those two songs if I was on terrestrial radio. But the people who have what the Romans called dignitas don't need to undignify themselves by talking about Limbaugh. Yeah, there it is. The Gene just gave it to me over at Raw Story. John Kerry, Limbaugh's tampering gave Clinton Indiana victory. After Hillary Clinton's squeaker victory in Indiana Tuesday night, opponent Barack Obama's advisors and surrogates, yada, yada, yada. If it hadn't been for Republicans taking Democratic ballots, he likely would have won in Indiana, said John Kerry. John, stick to your job, buddy. We on this end of the stick can go into the swamp, and we can go mano a mano with filth merchants like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. But when you guys do it, all you do is give them the publicity that they crave. Now, I know this probably sounds like a lecture you got from your mama somewhere along the way about ignoring the people who are pestering you. And mama gave you good advice. And to a certain extent, I ignore a lot of the stupid crap that flatulent gas bag Limbaugh does, and that Bortz does, and that the savage Wiener does, and that O'Reilly does, and that that life support system for a haircut Hannity job does, and all the rest of them. Every now and then they go so far over the top, though, that it justifies me shredding them a little bit. And that's what we're here for. We're here to help Democrats, progressives, and liberals define the terms of the debate. To engage in some framing, if you will, to use the current argot. That is not Obama or any of his surrogates or advisors' job, because they demean themselves when they get into the swamp. We're willing to be here. So you can stay out of it, guys and ladies. I hope somewhere along the way we learn. But for the most part, we don't. Because most Democrats don't understand, and by Democrats, most Democrat, the Chablis-swilling, shrimp-gobbling, upper echelon Democrats don't understand. And they don't like talk radio. And they don't like the idea, frankly, of that they could be exposed to criticism as well as adulation. And they think because they look at the demographic numbers of people who listen to Limbaugh and the rest of that crowd, that the Democratic element who does the same is the same sort of person. But here on the Horn, we have proven time and time again that the people who are interested in doing liberal talk radio are incredibly intelligent people, who want to share their ideas are incredibly intelligent people, and that the reason we can do something like conversation radio is because the people who engage in dialogue with the Horn actually have something to say besides mega dittos, Rush. We have real ideas. But as I've noted before, talk radio from a Democratic or progressive or liberal side cannot function as a means of issuing marching orders, because we are smart enough to process, and we are smart enough to analyze, and we're smart enough to look into the real meaning behind things. Not like the freakish listeners to right-wing hate radio who are stupid enough to actually pick up a phone, dial a toll-free number, and order an herbal baldness cure that's apparently made from avocado pits or something. Got to do something with the avocado pits. Damn. So, just a little memo. Not that they're listening. Because they're not. Most of the people who want to get their who desperately want to get their message out on our side of things still think that they can do it with a blog, or that they can do it with 3 weeks of advertising immediately in front of an election, or by printing emery boards or pencils or pens or those little fans that the funeral home has printed up that they give out at the church on hot Sundays in July. Don't work like that in the 21st century. But there is some real news out there. And sure, why not? Why not? It's prayer meeting. What the hell? This is the story of Ira Waltrip. Great guy, that Ira. He is, of course, an employee of Kellogg Brown and Root. And as of yesterday, he was officially charged with, wait for it, possession of child pornography. He was first caught with pornographic materials in 2006 and fired from Kellogg Brown and Root, who then subsequently, yeah, not kidding, rehired him before the year was out and sent him back to Baghdad, where, like a dog, you know, a dog returns to its, yeah, I know, it's dinner time some places, so let's not go any further. This is the quote from the story. Last month, while working as a KBR bus driver in Baghdad, Waltrip, age 48, was again discovered with suspected child pornography, including some pictures of prepubescent children engaged in sex with adults and some pictures of Waltrip with nude females who appear to be young teenagers. Today in U.S. District Court in Austin, Texas, where Waltrip has been charged with possession of child pornography, U.S. Magistrate Judge Robert Pittman appeared dismayed that Waltrip was rehired. Quote, he was rehired by that employer and participated in the same behavior and then may have possessed child pornography he produced. That was what Pittman said in advance of ordering Waltrip held this time without bond. The news report says a Houston-based KBR spokeswoman had no immediate comment today. You remember a few months back when, was it Blackwater Security, was caught gunning people down in the streets of Baghdad, and the State Department said there was no legal recourse against them? Remember that? Well, apparently, in Austin, Texas, such contractors, because heavily armed bus drivers are still the same kind of contractor as a Blackwater mercenary is, apparently you can be charged. It's making it stick that really matters. But, again, KBR will not have anything to do with holding its employees accountable. I forgot what I did with it, but there was a tremendous story last week, I think, from the Independent or the Telegraph, maybe the Independent, talking about the burgeoning industry in looted antiquities that are literally flooding the markets in America and Europe, stemming from the looting of the cultural legacy of Iraq, which is, of course, the very cradle of the idea of what it means to be human. When those of us of Northern European ancestry and those of us from just about every other ancestry except Mesopotamian were still squabbling with the hyenas over what the lions left, civilization was taking root in the land between the rivers. There was testimony in Congress last week that a camp manager for KBR caught stealing from Iraqi palaces was promoted rather than fired or even disciplined. There have been other reports that KBR employees have even gone so far as melting down precious gold artifacts from Iraq's past so that they can have a little, you know, what they call sweetening to the outrageous amounts of money that they're already being paid by you and me. More than 36 KBR employees, women, that's 36 women, more than 36 women who've worked for Kellogg Brown and Root, have come forward saying that they were raped, not by Iraqi men unable to control their urges, but by their very own co-workers. And Kellogg, Brown, and Root has, of course, demanded arbitration on them, and probably not one of those 36 women will ever see her rapist confronted by the judicial system in this country. There will be no public record, no transcript, no jury, no lawyers, and no judge. And that's what you get when you let authoritarian, right-wing, woman-hating, history-despising thugs run your country. Yeah, I ran that soundbite from Al Gore a little bit ago, and I was moved by the fact that he used a phrase in the context of his comments to Terry Gross at Fresh Air. He referred to our republic, not the homeland, not our nation, not our country, but the republic. And to the extent that I mentioned framing a few minutes ago, I think we would do well to start referring not to the United States or our country or our nation or the homeland, but as what it is, the republic and the union. You very, very seldom hear anyone refer to the union anymore. The only time the so-called mainstream or so-called professional media refers to us being a union is when they have to in January, when the president delivers the State of the Union address. Apart from that, it's the homeland. Apart from that, it's America, the land of the free. Oh. But we are a republic. And a republic is a very, very, very special political creature. And maybe it goes a little bit toward what we don't learn in the civics classes that we don't have. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know, but we would do well perhaps to reframe the discussion of what it means to be an American by talking about the Republic. Just a couple of speakers, well, here's a classic case of what a republic does not do. A republic does not run around trying to force other peoples to be a republic too, or to try to compel democracy at the muzzle of a gun. Now, I mentioned those 36 women who have had their bodies, minds, spirits, and souls violated by their co-workers at Kellogg, Brown, and Root for a reason. Because I'm not sure which way the contagion is spreading, or if maybe these are just separate, isolated incidents that have no relationship to themselves, to each other whatsoever. But somewhere in the back of my mind, there's a notion that there is a relationship. This particular instance concerns a woman in Afghanistan named Rukhma. Remember when George Bush came out of his spider hole the other day, a week or so ago, and declared that it's tough, but I think we're making progress. I believe we are making progress in Afghanistan. Well, here's an example of some of that Afghan progress. Rukma is a woman in Afghanistan, and Rukma is going, if she hasn't already gone, to prison. Rukma is going to prison for 4 years. And the judge who sent Rukma the prosecutor who sent Rukma to prison, I'm not sure, maybe it's judge, jury, executioner, prosecutor, all of it rolled into one, says that she's lucky she got off so light. What is Rukma's crime? Rukma's crime is that she was raped. Rukma's crime is that she was abused. And Rukma's final crime is that she then was forced to watch as her 3-year-old little boy was beaten to death. The rape resulted in her conviction for adultery and for escaping from her house in Pakistan. Now, granted, the man who did the raping, the abusing, and the murdering of the 3-year-old little boy was punished. He got 20 years. Not life. Not a hand lopped off. You know, you're all the time hearing about the eye for an eye law in the Muslim Middle East, and how, you know, thieves have one hand cut off. And I remember hearing right wingers back in earlier days saying, and if you go to Saudi Arabia, you will see many men with one hand, but none with no hands. But raping a woman doesn't get anything cut off? Okay, got it. Thanks, Allah. You're a heck of a god. Four years in prison for Rukma for adultery, escaping her house. She lives in a country where a woman stepping out of her front door is a felony. Last week, a young man on his 7th tour of duty in Afghanistan died so that an Afghan prosecutor could have the freedom to put Rukma in prison for 4 years for having the temerity to set foot outside her door. Abdul Qayyum said, if my wife goes to the bazaar without, he is the prosecutor, by the way, Abdul Qayyum, if my wife goes to the bazaar without my permission, I will kill her. This is our culture. This is Afghanistan, not America. How true, how true. But that's okay. The Republicans are working hard on transforming America into something more closely resembling Rukma's world. It begins with taking away a woman's right to determine and define the parameters under which she chooses to reproduce. It begins with eliminating the right to abortion, followed closely, as the right wing is hard at work, by eliminating the right of both men and women to have access to contraception. That's right, sometimes guys are responsible about it and put one of those little latex thingies on their John Thomas. thereby preventing the spread of disease and individual increases in population. And it is something that the right wing despises. Because if you get a hardcore right wing Republican all alone and maybe a little bit liquored up, he'll tell you that the world that Rukma lives in is a world that he envies. Can you imagine the horror of a mother having been raped, beaten, and then unable to do a damned thing as her 3-year-old little boy has his brains dashed out? And not one of the burly he-men, masculine Afghani men, would say a word to stop it. And she is a criminal. You gotta wonder if any members of Congress have heard about Rukma. You gotta wonder if any members of the clergy have heard about Rukma. You see, I suppose they have clocks in Afghanistan and calendars in Afghanistan. But you know what? Afghanistan in the year 2008 is very little different from Afghanistan in 320 BC. See, this isn't about Islam. This is about that tribal culture. This is the same culture that civilized Alexander and his Macedonians met when they crossed Persia into that benighted corner of the world. Women then were killed as well as they are now, and little babies were beaten to death or spitted on pikes as they are now. And yet George Bush thinks that he has actually got more on the ball than Alexander the Great, who couldn't conquer Afghanistan. Can you imagine the hubris? George Bush thinking that because he's got guns and rockets and missiles and bullets, that he can change a mindset that is probably 5, if not 25,000 years old, in which human beings with vaginas are the property of human beings with penises. Because that's how stark it is. There is no middle ground. There is no metric. There is no measurement by which, say, a smart woman is more valuable than a stupid man. No. You can be the most intelligent woman in Afghanistan, and you are pure human garbage next to the most benighted idiot male that that country has to offer. And I know that I'll probably get an email from somebody saying, well, it sounds like you're putting down the Afghanis. It's not their fault we invaded. It's not their fault we invaded, and it is not our fault that they are barbarians. And they are barbarians. You know where that word comes from, right? The ancient Greeks were a little bit snotty, and they thought that anybody who didn't speak good Greek was somehow a little bit less of a human being. See, that's a problem we have as humans. We sort of pigeonhole ourselves. Oh, you don't speak the right language. You must be a moron. But the ancient Greeks would listen to people speaking other languages, be it Persian or Latin or Etruscan or Scythian or Lydian or Armenian or whatever. And to the Greek ear, all they heard was bar, 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 bar. Hence our word, barbarian. And you know what? Call me a bigot. You'll be wrong. Call me prejudiced. You'll be wrong. But if that makes you feel better, fine. But there is nothing, 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 nothing to recommend a culture that puts Abdul Qayyum in power, that puts in power a man who will boldly and brazenly say, if my wife goes to the bazaar without my permission, I will kill her. This is Afghanistan. This is not America. Am I saying that America is better than Afghanistan on some sort of sliding scale? No. I am saying that the standard that I maintain for enlightened humanity is better than Afghanistan. Afghanistan is covered with things that, with places that end in N-D-E-R or N-D-R-A, because Alexander the Great built cities all over the place and named them all after himself. Kandahar is a region of Afghanistan named after Alexander the Great. And it has not changed 10 cents worth in 2,300 years. When I read the story about Rukma, I felt physically ill in my gut. Because, as I said, I did think about that young man on his seventh tour of duty who died of small arms fire, helping to make it possible for Abdul Qayyum to murder his wife if he feels like it, to help extend by another day, another month, another hour, another decade, whatever, the brutalism and the barbarity that exists out of that tribal structure. Oh, I know, start the National Geographic theme. There are beauties in the tribal structure of Afghanistan. Kiss my ass. Because for every moment of beauty in that horrid little place, there are literally millennia of horror. And the longer we're there, the more it's going to rub off on us. And it's going to make the nightmare of our returning veterans greater by far. Just is. No getting around it. Remember the addictions that people came back from Vietnam with? Wait till we start hearing, you know, the real skinny about heroin in Afghanistan. Because the longer we stay, the more likely it is that that'll be the only way that some people can get away from the misery and the mayhem and the murder and the chaos and the brutality. Don't you think? We can't even, as a people, insist that Hamid Karzai, former oil executive, establish and enforce basic, incredibly basic parameters of human rights in a country that we claim to have freed. What the hell did we free them from? I thought it was the Taliban that did all of this. It was the Taliban that blew up the Bamiyan Buddhas. Guess what? The Taliban were a manifestation of the tribalism that absolutely pollutes and poisons that entire region. From the so-called border provinces of Pakistan all the way across Afghanistan. Now, just as Christians, so-called phony, faked-up, dummied-up, rubed-up, ginned-up Christians here will use the Bible to justify their bigotry, these ancient benighted barbarians will use the Quran to justify theirs. Because the handiest justification for any barbarity is always religion, without fail. Abdul Qayyum said that Rukma got off lightly, with only 4 years. By the way, think about what an Afghan prison probably is like. I'm guessing that 4 years for Rukma is likely a death sentence. If she survives, she stands convicted of being a loose and immoral woman. What world awaits Rukma if the prison doors finally swing open? She's fair game for any man in that hellhole of a country. And we think that we can impose our republic on people that hateful, that backward, and that benighted. That's pretty egotistical, isn't it? What one American life is worth protecting Abdul Qayyum's right to murder his wife if she leaves for the bazaar without his permission? I fear that I sound xenophobic or bigoted. I really do, because I would not have that be so for a moment. But is it really worth our blood and our treasure to do what we're doing there? Put conversely, because I know, you know, there's liberals out there that think attacking Afghanistan was the right thing. Our buddy Mark Levine is one of them. What the hell are we spending the money on? Yeah, I'm sorry. Rukma puts the lie to Laura Bush's trips to Afghanistan where she, oh, look, we just opened up a new school for girls. Yeah, and they can learn their ABCs as long as they don't leave the house without permission. Otherwise, they get killed. This is the present and the future that we have made for ourselves. I fear that we spend too much time, because, look, you've heard liberals say it. And I wanted to make sure that this got out tonight, because I want to at least put myself on record as saying this. I've heard liberals say, well, we need to get out of Iraq so we can do the job right in Afghanistan. Screw that. We need to get out of Iraq and get out of Afghanistan. Period. We need to get out of Iraq because we have no business in Iraq, and we need to get out of Afghanistan because, you know what, there's no percentage in casting your pearls before swine. If my wife goes to the bazaar without my permission, I will kill her. This is our culture. Culture, my ass. That ain't culture. This is our ancient barbarity. Don't mess with it. People like Abdul Qayyum make it really hard for me to be the pacifist that I try to be. Because there's that little devil Fred Flintstone standing on my left shoulder that says, wouldn't you just love to see him hit in the back of the head with the butt of a rifle? And I go, no, no, no! It's not how you do it! It's a struggle. But we, Jonathan Turley notes, who needs Al-Qaeda when you have thousands of Qayyums to maintain their twisted view of paradise? Yeah, indeed, indeed. So if I have sounded bigoted or prejudiced, I apologize. It is not my intent. But this kind of stuff just drives me nuts. We don't need to get out of Iraq so we can pour all of that blood and that treasure that is there into Afghanistan. Unless we aim to be Alexander the Great, we need to just come home. Okay? Okay. And then not ignore warnings about, you know, people in 6-foot, 6-inch Arabs with portable dialysis machines intent on using planes as missiles. Not ignore those warnings, as the Bush administration did. It would not have been that hard to not have September 11th, 2001 happen. You've got to be pretty screwed up, pretty negligent, pretty brutally indifferent to human life and human suffering to let a 9/11 happen, which is what they did. So thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the musical segment of the program. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, and Peter Godbold, our IT professional, and the man who makes it makes all the streams do what the streams do, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the folks who stepped up to the plate in the last 24 hours and pushed us up over $600 for our monthly goal of $2,000. Bless you. Thank you. Thanks to our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
Gather round the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 142 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and our straight allies. The mainstream media told me to say that. Strictly Confidential is found exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net. Stop by Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net and have a look at what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today being Wednesday, May 7, 2008. So if you're listening at about 9.02 p.m. Eastern Time, on a Wednesday evening, May 7, 2008, you're listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and participate. I'll be giving out the phone numbers and email addresses in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from past shows. Then you'll find links there to the chat room. It's a good night to stop by the chat room. Just stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the chat link, and you'll be taken to the chat registration where you decide what username you'd like, and just that simple, you get to log in, and you'll find some of the smartest and funniest people on the planet. And indeed, it was a riot this evening when Bob Kincaid, well, let me just say, if you missed the Bob Kincaid show this evening, stop by White Rose Society and have a listen to the archive. It was a treat. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com for the Strictly Confidential MySpace page. You'll find links there also to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. And you're going to find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site. That's headonradionetwork.com, of which I am a small part. There you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. And there is a PayPal button there as well, to make it easy for you to support the Head On Radio Network, to keep the packets passing and the network cards interfacing and the hard drives spinning and the floppies flopping and the keyboards typing and the monitors shining in the dark wee hours of a West Virginia night. Those of you who are new to the Head On Radio Network may know